Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. No advertisers on this episode. Zero. My conversation with Larry Elder and with Dennis Prager, live from Phoenix, Arizona, about morality, God, the left, and more. If you want to support our show, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. You make what we do possible. You allow us to flourish and grow. Justin from Idaho, thank you for supporting us. Christopher from Massachusetts, thank you for supporting us. Ginny from Tennessee. Shelley from New York. Cynthia from Texas. Kristen from California. Kevin from Michigan. Karen from New Mexico. Pamela from Washington. Whitney from Utah. Bennett from Georgia. Elon from New Jersey. And Jarrett from Oklahoma. charliekirk.com/support. Thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting us and getting behind the work we are doing. If you want to come to America Fest, everybody, it's tpusa.com/AMFEST. That's tpusa.com/AMFEST. America Fest, everybody. tpusa.com/AMFEST is the place where you get to hear the biggest speakers in the movement: Tucker Carlson, Jesse Waters, Greg Gutfeld, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Candace Owens, and more big speakers to soon to be announced. Get your tickets today, tpusa.com/AMFEST. Check it out, everybody. It's going to be amazing. Phoenix, Arizona. If you live in the Southwest, if you live within, let's just say, a couple hundred miles of Phoenix, you got to be there, everybody. tpusa.com/AMFEST. Email us your thoughts. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie.
Hard to think about where to start this conversation, but I thought I'd start with our title, America for Which It Stands, which is, of course, as the general led you in the Pledge of Allegiance, is where that phrase comes from. And you think about some of the wording in that Pledge of Allegiance. One nation, I've heard that twice tonight, I love it. One nation under God, indivisible. One nation, indivisible. And yet we hear, and I know you guys hear every day, as I hear every day, that this country has never been more divided. In Springfield, 1858, Abraham Lincoln said we were a house divided, and he expects that the division will stop one way or the other. And I guess I would throw out the question to each of you to start us off with. Do you envision any kind of civil war that could afflict this country as we had in 1860, which was interestingly to me about one big, bad, terrible issue? Whereas today it seems like it's about 25,000 different issues. I don't think we've ever been more divided, but I would love your thoughts on whether we are in a cultural, a civil, a cold, or an imminent hard civil war. And whoever wants to start first, I'll give you the option to take it from there. Fine, Dennis. And while you're at it, thank you for volunteering. Dennis is always the first to volunteer. While you're at it, Dennis, tell us a little bit about your time in the capital of South Dakota.
Oh, okay. Poor Seth. I said, I just thought you might want to ask one of us the capital of South Dakota. It's a total nonsense thing that I do when guests come on my show and they're nervous and they go right before. So could you give me an idea of what you'll ask? And I just have this ongoing line. As I was explaining to Charlie, I do amuse myself a great deal. And
let me just say, like one minute before you're supposed to take the stage, getting that question from Dennis is very helpful.
So, right. Yes. That's right. So I tell them I'll ask you the capital of South Dakota. Then they get more nervous, and the mean part of me finds it funny. Anyway, I wrote about 15 or more years ago that America is in a civil war. I wrote that I pray it stays nonviolent, but we're in a civil war. the North and South shared more values than the right and the left in America today. Truth is, I share no values with the left. None. Literally, they have plenty of values. That's not true. That every evil group has values. Their values are awful, but they have values. They don't have no values. They value power, for example. It's a very big deal. They value self-esteem. The self-esteem, which was started by the left in California, John Vasconcelos, in the 1970s. I know it because I interviewed him at the time. And that's a very big part of all left-wing ideas. I'll save the world by opposing global warming. Do you know how good you feel about yourself? You are saving the world. How many of you think, I don't think I'm saving the world. None of you in this room think you're saving the world. Every leftist does. This is a very big element in what they do. Anyway, we have nothing in common. I want to make something clear. Every time I mention the left, I'm not talking about liberals. I have a great deal in common with liberals, except for one thing. They're naive and weak. They vote for the people who hate them, the left. Liberalism and leftism have virtually nothing in common. Liberals believe in racial integration. The Ku Klux Klan and the left believe in racial segregation. Okay, just to give you one example. Support for Israel was dyed in the wool of liberalism. The left hates Israel. The left hates America. A liberal wrote, "God bless America." So please understand this. The tragedy of the United States is that liberals don't vote what they believe. They vote what they've been indoctrinated into believing, that the right is their enemy. We are not their enemy. We are the protector of every liberal value, we conservatives. Therefore, I would not be surprised if this does lead to a civil war. Half this country will not allow the other half to destroy it. And I've written it, and the left has cited me to make fun of me, which is, they do, they have a whole body of workers just on working on me, which I take as a great compliment. And I have said that if there were a secession tomorrow, if every big city, all big cities are leftist, if every big city formed its own country, it's not contiguous geographically, it's an issue. But if they did, they could keep all of that finance, all of that culture, all of the money, everything. But then I will have Omaha, and I could live with Omaha better than with New York.
We'll go down the line, Mr. Elder. It is interesting, isn't it, to think about the Civil War of the 1860s. We are continually taunted and tainted as a systemically racist society because of what led up to that Civil War. I often point out on the show, I think the left has their history backwards. The majority of the country, the majority of the military, the majority of the states were on the side that tried to end slavery and did so victoriously. What is this with the left that wants to revive the losing side of the minority part of this country to say that that represents this country? It's an interesting take on it, isn't it?
Seth, I thought you wanted a yes or no answer.
Just like Dennis gave, I want that. Yeah. I want that.
Can I start by kind of referring to something that happened to me during the campaign when I was running for governor? Thank you. And I told this to Dennis when he was interviewing me about the campaign. I think it was during the campaign. I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of black pastors, 6 or 8 of them. And everything was going fine until I challenged them on the idea of systemic racism. They all believed that America was systemically racist. And I said, far and away, the biggest problem facing the black community is the large number of children who enter the world without a father married to the mother. And they just went nuts. And I said, let's do this. Get out your magic wand. Wave it over America. Remove every smidgen of racism from the hearts of white people. Now, everybody white thinks like Mother Teresa. I said, do we still have the phenomenon where 70% of black children enter the world without a father married to the mother? Up from 25%, by the way, in 1965. Do we still have the phenomenon where blacks at 13% of the population are 50% of the nation's homicides, almost all killed by another young black person? Do we still have the phenomenon where the number one cause of preventable death for young white men is accidents, like car accidents or drownings, whereas the number one cause of death, preventable or non-preventable, for young black men is homicide, almost always at the hands of another young black man? Do we still have the phenomenon where a young black man is 8 to 10 times more likely to be murdered than a young white man? And I said, the answer to that series of questions is yes, then I submit to you that systemic racism is not the problem and critical race theory is not the answer. And they went nuts. Dennis used to have a line, if I'm not mistaken, when the bigger the government, the smaller the people. I think I've heard you say that. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that when government becomes a parent, the people become the child. I was on Fox and Friends one morning, and I said in 1900, at all three levels, federal, state, local, government took less than 10% from the American people. Now it takes 32%. And if you add a value to mandates, unfunded mandates, as when you're running a business and they tell you you need to buy a scrubber or something you don't think you need to buy, or something they want you to buy that you think is more expensive than what you need, that's a cost. You add that, government takes 50% of what the American people produce. I get a phone call from a fact checker, and they said, do you have any sources for what you said? I said, no, I just pulled it out of my you-know-what. So I gave him a source for the assertion that government took less than 10%. Government now takes 32%, and if you add a value to mandates, it's about 50%. So they write an article, had the big meter, and it says, elder, half true. To their credit, I invited them on my radio show. I was so upset. And I said, you agreed with me that I was right when I said in 1900, government took less than 10%. They said, yeah, that was right. And you agree with me right now, government takes 32%. They said, yeah, that was right. I said, but you don't agree with me that government right now takes 50% when you add a value to unfunded mandate. They said, well, that's subjective. And I said, Heritage Foundation agrees with me. American Enterprise agrees with me. Leo Hanian from UCLA agrees with me. Yeah, but it's subjective. And I said, so I got 2 out of 3, but you gave me half right. Fuzzy math. So the slow moving train has been, when the ink was dry on the Constitution, Congress began to intrude in people's lives. 1792, they passed money for French refugees, and the father of the Constitution, James Madison, said, I cannot find where you have the authority to do this. And little by little by little, government has done that, to the point now where Joe Biden has mandated that every business, private or public, that has over 100 employees shall mandate that their employees get a vaccine. Absolutely outrageous, a complete and total assault on the Constitution. And that's where we are.
Charlie.
Feel free to feed off what they said or take
sure,
the questions
sure.
as I post.
I want to compliment you on the uplifting topic to begin tonight, by the way. Civil War and secession nullification.
Yes, yeah.
It's really... Yeah.
We'll end with death and grief and sorrow.
Yeah, well,
murder.
Yeah. Might as well get everyone's spirits up at the end of this. So the question is, are we heading towards a civil war? Dennis has been prolific on this and prophetic, because he said it earlier out loud, what we're already living through. And it's just a matter of time before I think we really kind of, it catches up to the, what is going to happen is going to catch up with our living through, which is, when I go to San Francisco, I have nothing in common with the people there. And it's mutual, by the way. Sarah Silverman, who calls herself a comedian, came out and she said, why are we living in the country with these unvaccinated people? I don't want to live in a country. Why don't they have their own country and we have our own country? And exactly, and what I just heard from so many people just said, yeah, let's do it. And, right. And so I just want you to kind of just absorb what just happened in the room here. You have a bunch of people who love this flag. That flag's not going to be around if those of you that just clapped get what you want. I'm being serious. You just clap for secession. And so that's a serious thing, that this room's enthusiastic about separating. We're already there, folks. This idea of like, oh, we're divided, like you got one side that's demanding the severance and the other side that can't wait for it. And you're already seeing it through, you know, kind of the slow motion secession that's happening on Southwest Airlines or American Airlines of people that move to other states because they feel they don't represent them. And so who knows how this is going to end up? It could end up in physical confrontation. I think the regime is trying to provoke physical confrontation. I think they want us to get physical, which is why at every event I'm at and anyone asks me, when literally someone asked me rather bluntly and suspiciously bluntly, when do we get the guns? I denounced him and I said, that's exactly what the power grabbers want you to do. That will give them the Patriot Act 2.0 to be able to really seize control over you right now. It's that what they don't want you to do is keep on showing up to school board meetings and be patient and have self-control and take back power through peaceful means. That's what they're really afraid of. So who knows where this is going to end? But I think that one of the reasons, it's actually this, it's completely the opposite of what most establishment Republicans would tell you. I think one of the reasons why we're separating is because the states have actually gone along with this big lie that they are submissive and they're a project of the federal government. The states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. And, you know, we're here in this state of Arizona, and we live here now, my wife and I, and what a huge disappointment the political leadership in this state has been. I'll give you a great example. You give Joe Biden 30 days. Okay, he's president. Is he going to secure the border? Is he going to mobilize the Border Patrol or DHS? Within 30 minutes, not 30 days, you knew this regime wanted wide open borders. They wanted permanent demographic change. They wanted illegals to come into the state of Arizona. Okay, you know what you're dealing with. Why is it that the governor of the state didn't mobilize the National Guard immediately and start to say, we're going to arrest these people ourselves and kick them out of the state of Arizona? That could be the pandemic money, it could be the COVID money, whatever. The reason is because we're following a book of rules that the other side discarded a long time ago. And so this is my biggest frustration when dealing with the moderates that run the Republican Party far too often, is that they say, oh, you know, we have to follow the federal protocol. And I say, well, what do you have to say about Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, LA, Denver, and Chicago, New York becoming sanctuary cities? They don't follow federal immigration law. In Philadelphia, a woman was raped for 45 minutes while people looked onward with an illegal alien and they filmed it. You guys didn't hear the story. It's amazing how so many people still have not heard this story. It should have been the number one news story on the planet, where a woman was raped for 45 minutes. The train stops 20 times.
It would have been if the rapist were white and the woman was a person of color.
That's correct. Instead, it was an illegal alien in Philadelphia who should have been deported. And so we've already lived through nullification. The other side has been nullifying federal laws for quite some time. In Nevada, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, they basically nullified marijuana law and drug law, saying we don't like these laws, we're not going to follow them. So why is it that then we as Republicans or conservatives or just Americans, right? Why don't we say, hold on, our form of resistance is going to be enforcing the law. If DHS and Border Patrol is going to be told to stand down from the current regime, then we're going to start the Arizona Border Patrol and we're going to take it into our own hands. That's actually how you start to do things. And I'll give you one more example. Everyone's complaining about energy prices as if you can't do anything about it, right? Well, we can't do anything about it. Well, Joe Biden signed an executive order saying that we have to stop building the Keystone XL pipeline. Remember that? So why did Republican governors listen to him? Why don't they just send everyone back to work immediately? Say, no, the pipeline's going up. You're going to have to go arrest a bunch of our workers and plumbers, welders or people that are working on the pipeline because we want energy security and we don't care what you have to say. The point is this, is that, yeah, the country's falling apart because you got one side doing it and the other side letting them. And so until that changes, your kids and grandkids, they got no hope.
On that issue of change, are you hopeful? I'll ask each and every one of you, are you hopeful about the future on this front, or are you because of things like Virginia, Or are you more worried about further failure on this front because of situations like California? California could not have a worse situation when it comes to almost every social or economic indicator, right? Homelessness, drug use, poor education outcomes, high prices from gas to food, you name it, crime, violent crime, of course. Are we worried at all, Larry? I'll start with you on this, given your most direct experience. Are we worried that we're getting used to this kind of decadence? Or are we optimistic that what we saw in Virginia is a bright light and a green light for us?
Well, I remain seriously worried about California, of course. When I ran, the issues were, as you pointed out, crime. Crime is up in virtually every major city in California, 30-40% in L.A. I'm talking about violent crime, shootings, homicides up 40%. Homelessness. According to a HUD study, California has almost half the nation's homeless population. The governor shut down the state in a more draconian way than any other governor did in the other 49 states. About a third of all small businesses are now gone forever in California, most of them run by people of color, to use that expression. I only say that because the left prides itself on caring about people of color. The education was shut down, in-school education, for a whole year. 80% of the kids educated in government schools in California are black and brown. Again, I only mention the race because that's what the left prides themselves on caring about. Before the pandemic, Seth, 75% of black boys could not read at state levels of proficiency. Math scores even worse. Half of third graders could not. You know, I like an occasional glass of red wine, but I don't consider myself to be a connoisseur. He was up there at the French Laundry restaurant, he meaning Gavin Newsom, not wearing a face mask, not engaging in social distancing while imposing those mandates on everybody else, incurring a $12,000 wine tab. I don't know what he ordered, but I assure you it wasn't Mad Dog 2020. More people have left California this year than have left all of last year. The rate at which they're leaving is twice what it was 2 years ago. And the number one reason that middle class and working class people cite when they leave California is they can't afford the price of a home. The average price of a home in California just hit $800,000, which is 175% above the national average. It's because of the stranglehold environmentalists have over California that can stop virtually any development to the point now where California is probably down about 1 million housing units. It would be but for these kinds of laws. Bad forest management. We're running out of water. Israel is a desert country in the Middle East. Because of desalination, they've got a body of water next to them called the Mediterranean. We have a body of water next to us called the Pacific Ocean. We can't figure this out. And of course, we're having rolling brownouts because of the pressure on the utility companies to rely on weather-dependent, unreliable things like wind and solar. I thought that California had hit rock bottom, which is why I ran. And the recall was unsuccessful. My race, however, if you look at the counties in California, there were 58 counties. We carried 29. He carried 29, obviously the more populous ones. On the replacement side, I carried 57 of 58 counties. The only one I didn't carry was San Francisco. I lost that by 149 votes. And I didn't spend one dime. Thank you. Didn't spend one dime or 1 minute campaigning there. But I thought California had hit rock bottom, and I determined that the definition of rock bottom for California is when a homeless guy relieves himself on your front lawn. And when that happens, then maybe, just maybe, California turned it around. The good news is I believe that we inspired the way the Virginia race went because they drew the wrong conclusion. What Gavin Newsom said from day one was that this is a Republican takeover. He said that I was, quote, more Trump than Trump. I'm not sure whether I should be flattered or offended. I was called a Trump wannabe, Trump light, and the LA Times called me the black face of white supremacy. And by the way, while I'm on this, I was in Venice, outside of Los Angeles, homeless encampment, and a white woman wearing a gorilla mask threw an egg at me. And bad aim didn't hit me. And the LA Times and others described this as a white woman wearing a gorilla mask. White woman wearing a gorilla mask. And finally I said, how do we know it was a mask? Maybe she was just having a bad hair day. So LA Times has an article about it. Elder involved in altercation in Venice, and there was a picture of me hugging a campaign supporter, and they froze the picture so it looked as if I was slapping her. So if you saw the headline, saw the picture, you would get the impression that the altercation was me being a perpetrator of an act of violence against this woman. The woman in the picture was so angry, she contacted the LA Times. The LA Times removed the picture, didn't change the headline. The point is this. The race in Virginia was influenced because the Democrat, Terry McAuliffe, assumed all he had to do was use the word Donald Trump. He invoked the name Donald Trump four or five times in their debate. My opponent was able to escape not having a debate. And you look at his commercials, and they talked about Trump and Trump and Trump and Trump. They drew the wrong lesson from California. California is 75% registered as other than Republican. Virginia, very different. It failed. But that was the same MO that they used. And I know it was because the campaign manager for Governor Gavin Newsom bragged that they turned this into a referendum, not on crime, not on taxes, not on the price of a home, not on the fact that people are leaving, but this is going to be a Republican takeover led by a guy who's more Trump than Trump. They tried the same BS in Virginia, and it blew up in their faces. So I'm looking at Joe Biden's poll numbers, which are abysmal. I'm looking at his numbers on the economy, which are abysmal, his numbers on immigration, which are even worse. And maybe the pendulum has swung so far to the left that even people who are sane Democrats and independents are now rethinking their assumptions. I think we're going to have an enormous year next year in the House. I think we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back the White House, I believe, in 2024. They've gone too far.
Do you agree, Charlie?
Probably, yes. And I think that's a good thing. I think Virginia was good. But it's not enough. We all know that. We're not going to be fooled anymore as if winning elections is what's going to solve our problems. You all know that. We saw that with the Tea Party movement. We saw that with Trump, right? He did a great job. But from day one, he was spied on. There was an internal coup against him. But it's a necessary component. Make no mistake. I mean, you have the Attorney General of the United States who runs the Department of Justice, who just came out today, and we knew this was happening, spying on moms and dads showing up to school board meetings, establishing them as domestic terrorists. We know that's happening. And without the House and without the Senate, we're not even allowed to call hearings, right? We have to wait our turn in line. So for that measure, it's a very positive thing. But yeah, you asked the question, are you hopeful? I am hopeful about a couple things. So let me tell you what I'm hopeful about. And it's less about politics, and it's more just about attitude. And it's also about durability. And so after Biden was implemented, not elected, remember, he's an implemented president, by the way. After Biden was implemented, we very well could have engaged in self-pity. And self-pity, as Dennis has taught so many people throughout the years, is a really bad starting point for anything constructive. We could have said, oh, they had $420 million from Zuckerberg. You know, they spent all this money, mail-in ballots. The country's over. But instead, you know, the regime called all of us domestic terrorists. They still do. They thought they could pummel us into submission. They thought in March of this last year, we'd say, okay, enough. Let's make Liz Cheney the head of the Republican Party, right? Or bring Mitt Romney back. And the fact you're laughing brings me great joy. It does, because we know that's a ridiculous, you know, idea. What happened was the opposite. What happened was, because of how parents were exposed to their kids' education during the Fauci virus, parents across the country, all of a sudden, in a way they never expected, the other side never expected, got intimately involved in education policy and the education fights. And through March and April and May, all of a sudden we saw the most robust, authentic, and quite honestly, sometimes messy political movement that still has traction and growing today. It's moms and dads showing up to school board meetings across the country. And so you ask, am I hopeful? Our homeschooling population has doubled in the last 18 months. That gives me hope. Doubled. We have twice as many people in homeschooling. When we did our campus tour at Turning Point USA, we can't find rooms big enough to be able to fit all the students that want to hear us talk on campus. And so I'll be honest that I think that politicians are largely a waste of time. I do. I think that we need to give them very short, easy to understand to instructions that they have to follow. And if they don't, we have to replace them. And mostly we have to keep the pressure on Republicans. But our energy, everybody, has to be less about voting and kind of the palace intrigue and this. Are you showing up to school board meetings? Are you showing up to city council meetings? Are you homeschooling your kids? Are you showing up locally? Because honestly, for the last 20, you know, last 20 years, or at least the last 5 years, like, Charlie, I bought the pillow. I watched Fox News. I did everything I was supposed to do. And it's like, that's not enough. You have to do more. So I'm hopeful because the people are tougher, stronger, and more committed than ever before. And eventually the political leaders will follow.
Dennis, I'll ask you to weigh on that in on that as well. And Dennis, while you're at it, I'd love you to address something that both Larry and Charlie brought up, which was in the year 2020 and the year 2021, did you ever think you would see candidates, whatever their race, whether they be Larry Elder or whether they be Brian Youngkin in Virginia, be called racists? Did you ever think you would see race being used as much as it is these days against Republicans in the year 2020, 2021?
Actually, I did. Those of you who listen to my show know that at least 20 years ago, I came up with SIXHIRB, SIXHIRB, sexist, intolerant, xenophobic, homophobic, Islamophobic, racist, bigoted. So the reason that I came up with it was that I know the left extremely well. I don't know if it's God's hand or incredible coincidence. I majored at the Columbia in graduate school. I majored in communist affairs. There were seven of us in the entire university. My instructor was Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's security man. And I learned Russian to read Pravda. I visited communist countries over and over. So I know the left better than most people. And their modus operandi is never to debate and only to smear. And I learned that from Stalin. Stalin called Trotsky a fascist. Now, you have to understand, Trotsky, along with Lenin, founded the Communist Party of Russia, ultimately the Soviet Union. He founded the Red Army. You can't get more communist than Leon Trotsky. And yet, he was, along with Stalin and three others, Kamenev, Zinoviev, and Bukharin. That's just to prove to you I know my stuff. The five possible successors to Lenin who died in 24. So, of course, he hated Trotsky because Trotsky was a competitor with him for power. And he called him a fascist. And that taught me what they do. They use words as weapons. There is no truth behind the words. If Larry is the black face of white supremacy, then I am the Jewish face of Nazism. Right? Wasn't that equally valid? Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised they haven't said that, actually, now that I may have given Media Matters an idea right now. That's all they do. Words are have no significance. Men give birth. That means words have no significance. You literally can't say anything if it will further your cause. I was on Bill Maher's show exactly 2 years ago, fall of 2019, right before COVID. And he was talking about how Trump lies. And I said, no Trump lie comes close to left-wing lies. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I said, well, as an example, America is is systemically racist, is one of the greatest lies in history. And men menstruate is a lie. When I said, you can see this, it's still on YouTube. And you will see Bill Maher cracks up, and so does his audience. This is a very important lesson in the power of the left. 2 years ago, Bill Maher and his audience laughed at me, not at the statement, laughed at me for saying something so ridiculous that leftists say men menstruate. Today, if you do not say men menstruate, you are considered a hater and anti-science. It takes the left about a month to reorient all of language into an Orwellian shape. So this is their tactic. Was I am not surprised about what he was called. What is disgusting is that the scum who called him that, I gotta watch my language, a bad woman named Erica D. Smith at the LA Times, it was not fired. That no one at the LA Times took issue with it. It's truly evil what they engage in. Do you understand? It is evil. They don't debate Larry Elder. Ta-Nehisi Coates, I have offered, I don't know if Larry knows this, I have offered on my show for a long time, not just when he ran for governor. I have offered tens of thousands of dollars I will raise from Prager University, because I have clout at Prager U. And I know most of the people who run it. So anyway, I will raise tens of thousands of dollars to have Ta-Nehisi Coates debate Larry Elder or what's the other guy?
Ibram X. Kendi.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Ibram exactly. Harry Rogers.
That's his By the way, I did the same thing. If Thomas Friedman of the New York Times wants to debate me, I will raise tens of thousands of dollars for his favorite for Black Lives Matter will give the contribution. They don't debate. They don't. They're afraid to debate because all they know how to do is smear. The left has no intellectual or moral basis. None. And you must understand that. They only know how to hate everything they charge us with. Do you know, let me tell you, many of you know I am a Jew and I grew up in New York. So, of course, on my birth certificate, it said Democrat. It's just a given. You're a Jew in New York. It says Democrat under party. And by the way, now that is fixed. Sex is not fixed. Party is fixed. You are a Democrat the rest of your life, but you may not be a male the rest of your life. So anyway, I grew up thinking this way. And I remember when I first encountered, because I grew up in sort of a ghetto, a democratic, not leftist, democratic, not a lot of nice people. But I remember when I first truly immersed myself among conservatives. And the thing that blew my mind was they're nicer. And I believe that to this day. Of course, there are no nice leftists. There are nice liberals. There's no question. And there are some ugly conservatives. That's a given. But by and large, I found people just nicer and finer and more open. You know, I wrote a book on anti-Semitism. I taught Jewish history at Brooklyn College. I wrote the most widely used English introduction to Judaism. So, and 3 of 5 volumes of a Bible commentary. So I'm pretty steeped in Judaism. Thank you. Well, at least a dozen of you have read it. That's good. You should all read it. It's life-changing. It's called The Rational Bible. I have no problem saying that it's life-changing. But anyway, I wrote an article that is very personal and very powerful about America. I moved to California in 1976, and I moved to a city called Simi Valley. It was empty. It had 2 restaurants. Had I bought a hut, I'd be a multimillionaire today. Simi Valley is a bustling city. I joined the Rotary Club. I was 26 years old. I joined the Rotary Club of Simi Valley, California. I was the only Jew in the club. And the point that I make in the article I wrote about it that so blew my mind was this: it didn't matter. And that cannot be said anywhere in the world If a Jew joined if a Jew was the only Jew in some French Rotary Club chapter, he would be known as the Jew of the club. That doesn't mean they're anti-Semitic. It means they're not American. He's a black, I'm a Jew, Charlie's a Buddhist. Does anybody care? Charlie's a WASP. Okay. By the way, I am a WASPophile. I just want you to know that. I think the American WASP created the greatest country in the history of the world, and they should be given credit for it. But the, yes, all right. We don't know, Americans don't know how wonderful this country is. And I hate ingrates. My belief is that if you go to college, you get a degree in ingratitude. Whatever your specialty, you get a BA, you get a master's, and you get a PhD in ingratitude. This is an amazing country for everybody. Black, Jew, Hispanic, gay.
Charlie, Dennis used a lot of words that that are pregnant with political implications, science, race. He was talking about. He's looking at authoritarianism and censorship. You, laboring on our college campuses, God bless you for doing it. You know the censorship world very well. A lot of us who have not been on the college campuses in a long time, we're kind of new to it. Once COVID came, and then of course after the election, we saw a doubling down. But censorship in the name of science is what was being done to most Americans outside of the college campus who had what I assume are many of the views many of us in this room have. And I guess I'd like to ask you, start with you, what does it say to you about the condition of America and America going forward as a country that starts with give me liberty or give me death and live free or die, or as he died to make men holy, we shall die to make men free, better dead than red. Let's roll, only 20 years ago, to let's roll up under a bed and take cover. What does it say to you about the conditions of this country, knowing how we used to handle threats, internal and external, and how we handle them now? With the idea that only half of the country gets to say something about them.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So let's talk first about censorship. So, you know, Dennis and PragerU did a great job with their Google lawsuit. They were way ahead of the curve, by the way. They tried to warn everyone that Google was going to shut everyone up. And people took them seriously, but not enough people. And then next thing you know, Donald Trump gets kicked off YouTube, Twitter, Facebook all in one day. And it's kind of, I told you so, right, Dennis? It was one of those things. And we kind of have a separate government that exists in our country, one that we elect and one that is technocratic and one that is headquartered in Silicon Valley and in Menlo Park. So I could get into that form of censorship. I could also talk about the form of censorship that exists on college campuses, you know, whether it be the administration or Antifa and all that. But the type of censorship that I think is actually most helpful to talk about is one that every single person in this room participate in, which is when we shut ourselves up. Self-censorship has become the biggest form and most powerful form of censorship. Now, it's not only we don't shut ourselves up because we always want to. It's largely because we're afraid of the price or the cost associated with speaking up. And, you know, a good example of this is when people say, Charlie, what can I do? And I ask them, I say, at work or with your friends, are you allowed to express your political or religious or moral beliefs? And a vast majority of the people that listen to my show say no. I say, well, then you are not free. I say, let's just start there. You know, instead of you running for governor or whatever, which are all great things, I say, why don't you, next time at your lunch break, tell the people around you how you view the world? Like, Charlie, I can't do that. I mean, I'll lose my job. I'll be ridiculed. I'll be mocked. I'll be smeared. So of course you will be. So why won't you do it? And that's really the issue, isn't it? And this has been one of the genius moves of the left, is that they are able to hold hostage our decadence, to use a great word, our lifestyle, our luxury, over us. We have a great life here in America, and conservatives know they have a great life. And it's actually this very interesting thing. It's this inverse relationship, and I'd love Dennis's thoughts on this. Because conservatives are more thankful to be an American and thankful for what they have, I think we're also more afraid to lose it. And so because of that, we're also afraid to act. It should be the opposite, quite honestly. We should be the ones that are banging the table and say, I don't care about my country club membership. I don't care about this. But instead, we have political paralysis that has plagued the conservative movement, where people come up to me and say, Charlie, you're so brave. You're so courageous. And I appreciate that, right? Death threats, traveling around the country, having, 50 different news outlets that want to terminate you every single day is not for everyone, right? Traveling 330 days a year, but I also am kind of saying, to your point, where and how do we stop being a country where you are not allowed in a setting with coworkers to express a political viewpoint that you support the duly elected president of the United States, when Trump was president? And there's a lot of different factors for it. And one of the major factors is we put up with it. We allowed this. And this is something that's important is we valued this false promise of building bridges with people that hate you and hate our country. I'm all for trying to build bridges or whatever, I guess. But who's to say that you should curtail the truth to try to have false agreement with people? And this is we're supposed to always, try to agree with the other side on stuff that is detrimental to the republic. And so to answer your question, overnight, we could destroy cancel culture, 99% of it. Overnight, all of us, if we decided to be the same person in public that we are in private. But I'm going to tell you right now, half this room, you will lose your closest friends, relatives, family members. Your Thanksgiving will be a total disaster this week, next week. You'll be kicked out of country clubs. You'll lose business contracts.
But you save on Christmas gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And, yes. And the most important thing, you'll be free. And so it's a question. That's the question. And I encourage everyone, you'll be a happier person if you're the same person in public that you are in private. Dennis?
Yes. I should have announced at the outset rather than right now. I can't stay the entire time. And the good news is you have these two great guys. And I want to say something about them. And the reason, by the way, is only there was an assumption that there was a 10 o'clock flight back to L.A., which in the good old days did exist. But it turns out that there isn't. So we meant well, and I will be back, I promise. But I just want to say something. And I want to very much comment on what you were just talking about you will be happier. And that will be a great thing for me to end my own participation. I want to say something about these two guys. I think that the world is divided, you could say the world is divided between, and then you could have 100 different, those who drive slowly in the left lane and those who do not. I mean, that's just one example. There are many, between the happy and the unhappy, between the moody and the non-moody. So I have another division that, because I've always been very introspective. There are those who want to be stars, and there are those who want to be on an all-star team. I much prefer being on an all-star team than being a star. That's just my nature. I'm not taking credit for it, and that's how I feel with these two guys. And I'm sort of making up for Charlie, who left Minnesota when we were together one night to. He had to make a flight to Botswana, and where he's opening a new
for the Buddhist
CPUSA chapter. Turning Point Botswana. It's very successful so far. I'm very touched. I'm looking forward to speaking there, Charlie. So let me just tell you. I want to tell you a story about this very dear subject to me. About coming out of the closet. I received a letter about 2 years ago, and I can't read all of my mail, but I opened up this email for whatever reason. Turns out to have been a very eloquent letter, young woman, 20 years old, that She said, I want you to know that your book, Still the Best Hope, which is my book about the left and America, turned me from liberal to conservative. Then I started watching your videos and PragerU, and I just want you to know what you've done for me. And by the way, just for your interest, if it interests you, I am a junior at Harvard. So it turns out she lives in the LA area, and I invited her to come on the show to say that publicly, that work that I have done turned her from liberal to conservative. I want people to know that what we do, the three of us and others, works. So she comes to the studio, and before she went on, I said to her, before you go on, I need to tell you exactly what you were saying. I need to tell you, coming on the Dennis Prager show will mean you will lose friends, you will be attacked, you will be mocked, and you will be persona non grata at Harvard. I scared her so much. She said, I'll never forget. Can I call my mom? I found that so endearing. So during the break, she steps out and calls her mother, and I continue my show. Next break, she comes back in. I had no idea what she would decide. And she said, I'm coming on. So she came on. About 6 months later, I had her come on the show again to find out what happened. This is what she told me, and for that matter, millions of others. She said, Dennis, after I was on your show, I had 2 weeks of hell. Hell. Friends I have had since elementary school utterly abandoned me. I was dropped from Facebook, from their Twitter account, and any contact. Relatives said, I want nothing to do with you. And then I said, and then what happened after the 2 weeks of hell? She said, and then I entered heaven. And I said, what do you mean? She said, right, that's one of the things. She said, for everybody I lost, I got 5 new friends. You must understand, if you're in the closet, nobody is going to come into the closet with you. If you come out of the closet, kindred spirits know you exist, and they contact you, and then you have genuine friends, not friends for movies, friends for life, friends for a value system that you share with them. What else? I said, not, by the way, that was enough. She said, I'll tell you another thing that occurred. I had not slept well for years. I now sleep like a baby. That, and this is from a 22-year-old, now 22, she was 21. It was remarkable. You do sleep better when you're at peace with yourself. When you don't hide who you are, you sleep better. He was right, you are happier. That is exactly right. However, I want to say, just as I said to her, it happened tonight, speaking to some of you in the meet and greet before this talk, where somebody came over, a woman said, and that her son no longer talks to her because he's so far left and hates her for being on the right. By the way, does anybody know of an equivalent situation in the other direction? Is there any child who doesn't speak to a parent because they voted for Biden? Of course not. And by the way, if such a child existed, I would call them the evil. You are evil if you don't talk to a parent because of politics. You are evil. This is why, by the way, always comes back for me to the Bible. If you believe that God said, honor your father and mother, you know there's no asterisk unless they voted wrong. It is only for people who have no sense of moral obligation that they will act like they are dead to their parent. That is a rotten kid, and I am so sorry to say to any of you that you might have a rotten kid. But I will say this, and I want to leave you with this because you know I do a happiness hour. I care about people's happiness a great deal. I want you to know I change people's lives. That's my intention. But I want you to know how many callers have changed my life. I did a show on the happiness hour once. Can you be happier than your least happy child? People say you can't be any happier than your least happy child. It's a common statement which I loathe. I am totally opposed to parents' happiness being held hostage by their children. I'm 100% opposed to it. You're miserable, I will not be, is the proper response to such a child. Woman calls up on this subject, and I believe she affected millions of people, including me. She said, Dennis, I'll never forget, she had a southern accent somewhere in the south. Dennis, I have a miserable 35-year-old daughter. And you know what I decided one day? This is what I concluded, and this is my attitude. I didn't break her. I can't fix her. I thought that was brilliant. If your child doesn't talk to you because you voted for Trump, you did not break that child. Your child decided to be broken. And you can't fix it. I don't know what to say, except my heart goes out to you, but you are unfortunately not alone. And it is one of the many reasons I believe our side is nicer than theirs. Thank you all very much.
Larry, wow. Feel wow. free to build off that, or if you want.
on that note, I'm leaving too. You know, Seth, it reminds me when I was running, one of the first questions I got was, do you believe the 2020 election was stolen? I was asked that over and over and over again. And I always gave the same response, and it was never printed. And when I was interviewed on television, pre-taped, they never aired it. I said, just once, I'd like you to ask my opponent, Gavin Newsom, if he believes 2016 was stolen. And I would get this confused expression. And I said, well, you know that for 4 years, for the entirety of the Trump administration, Hillary referred to President Trump as illegitimate, her word, not mine. She called the election of 2016 stolen, her word, not mine. Said it over and over and over again. To the point where 2/3 of Democrats believe that the Russians changed vote tallies in 2016 to get Trump elected. There were two major findings in the 1,000-page Senate report on the 2016 election. I read it. Many of you probably are waiting for them to turn it into a movie. And they made two major conclusions. Number one, despite all of the Russian effort, they failed to change a single vote tally. Again, 2/3 of Democrats believe that they did. The second major conclusion was, we can't determine one way or the other whether or not the Russian interference, quote, changed the outcome of the election. Gallup poll, 78% of Democrats believe the Russian interference, quote, changed the outcome of the election in 2016. A greater percentage of Democrats believe 2016 was stolen. The Republicans who believe the same thing about 2020, yet Gavin Newsom was never asked whether he believes 2016 was stolen. And if he does believe it, or does not believe it, there's a follow-up question. And the question is simple. Should Hillary Clinton have her social media platforms, as Charlie pointed out, shut down? The way Donald Trump's were for promoting the so-called big lie. And they just had this confused expression. Donald Trump is condemned for allegedly pushing the big lie about 2020, Hillary writes books where she complains about 2016 and her social media platforms are not shut down. Stacey Abrams ran for governor in 2018, still claims the election was stolen, campaigned for Terry McAuliffe from Virginia, on the podium said the election was stolen. He repeated it. Ask Al Gore whether he believes 2000 was fair and square. He still believes the Supreme Court put George W. Bush in the White House. So Democrats routinely complain about elections being stolen, and nothing seems to happen. We complain about it, and we're either called conspiracy theorists or so are losers. This is a kind of double standard that we need to stand up and push back on.
Following up on that, and maybe this gets to the problem of social media, but maybe it's bigger than that too. Both of you, if you wouldn't mind, we all know, I think, this phenomenon I'm encountering more and more of in conversations with liberals, let's call them, or Democrats, the things that they don't know but they think they know. Of course, Brett Kavanaugh was a rapist. Donald Trump is a white supremacist. We're all white supremacists. January 6th was white supremacy. Kyle Rittenhouse is a domestic terrorist. The list of the vaccine protects others. There's a list of things. There's a list of things that they actually think are true, and without political or ideological artifice. Yes, they're Democrats because I guess they watch CNN and they read maybe the Arizona Republic or the LA Times. But when you have a conversation with them and give them give them your perspective, give them the facts, you do see the wheels turning a little bit once in a while. And I'm wondering how much of the left, the liberal movement in America, the Democratic Party, you think is there. Because at the end of the day, we would, wouldn't we, rather have them come to our side than split that flag in half?
Yeah. Obviously, ideally, you know, you kind of bring up a funny thing. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. I grew up watching it. And I don't expect applause for it because it's, you know, it's whatever. But there's this great line that George has where it's all about whether or not they could pass a lie detector test. And George turns to Jerry, says, "Jerry, it's not a lie if you believe it."
Right.
That's the left. I never put that together.
Yeah.
It's not a lie if you believe it. Again, some of you, that's very funny if you understand the show. But I think that there's comfort in if you convince yourself first of it,
yeah,
then it's not a lie.
Yeah.
Let me focus on one. I do want to, these events are fun because it's kind of free form. But I do want to focus on one thing that I'm losing patience with, and I don't have a lot of patience to begin with, but which is one of the great injustices of my life of what we've lived is what we lived through the last 18 months of how we have not been allowed to have any form of dialogue or honest conversation about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, aspirin, azithromycin, Regeneron, or any of these things. And I'm not here to give you medical advice. That's not why I'm here. But I am here to ask you, how did we get to a place and what are we going to do to fix it and stop it tonight, at least in our own circles, that you're not even allowed to have any form of a decent conversation around treatments, around something that completely changed the American way of life for 18 months, where you have ivermectin, which is a drug that Jimmy Carter brought to Africa that cured millions of children from river blindness, that won a Nobel Prize for humans, gets called a horse dewormer by CNN when Joe Rogan uses it. When you have monoclonal antibodies that are not, most people don't even know about monoclonal antibodies or Regeneron. It's incredible. When polled, most people don't even know it exists as an effective or safe treatment. Aspirin, which was showed that could potentially reduce hospitalizations. Aspirin by 80%, just aspirin, a simple blood thinner. And not to mention azithromycin, vitamin D. And I think that it kind of goes to this deeper question that we've been kind of dancing around tonight, but I want to zero in on, which is we live under the regime of the unelected. And part of this regime that all of us have seen kind of manifested, the best mascot that we could pinpoint is Fauci. And Fauci, who should be in prison, by the way, for lying to Congress. But Fauci's entire career, it's worse than that he even controls the public health agencies and all that. He's failed upwards his entire life. We know that. He's never done anything meaningful or anything significant. He's the highest paid federal employee by far. And yet he right there is kind of like Plato's guardian, which is that I get to put forward all these different rules, but I don't have to live under them myself. You saw this with Martha's Vineyard and Obama. You see this with the unmasked Met Gala. Meanwhile, your children have to wear masks so they go to Scottsdale Unified School District, right? They have to wear masks to chaparral, but meanwhile, the unelected don't. And what's really kind of played out in real time is how trusting, and I can't believe how gullible America was. We are of people that just have titles and no wisdom. This is one of the number one takeaways of the Fauci virus, is that you have people saying absolute garbage on television and people not along because they have MD or New York Times or Harvard or Stanford. It's the ultimate argument from authority. And I'm not to say that they're wrong about everything, but when all of a sudden you say, hold on a second, this should have been the breaking point. Wait a second. The virus doesn't spread if it's a George Floyd rally. Like, hold on a second. Like, you know, you guys know this, right? That the way the virus was actually programmed in the lab, Wuhan laboratory, was that if systemic racism is mentioned, everyone gets immediately inoculated. You know that, right, Larry?
Of course.
No, the real vaccine is to check your privilege and to take a knee. Everyone's inoculated from that. At that point, it should have been like, okay, I'm not that stupid. But what's been amazing is that it continued. And the question is why. That is the real question. And I think I've come to it. And Orwell was so special. He really was. I encourage you all to reread 1984. He died way too young. And he was a socialist, but not in the way that you might think. He wasn't. He was an anti-authoritarian utopian in some sense. But Orwell really hit this. I don't think most people really want to be free. And, you know, I'm kind of stealing some of Dennis's stuff here, but I think most people are super scared of actually living with the truth. They would rather be told what to do and being taken care of. And I shudder to think that, because that's not the country I grew up in. The country I grew up in did value freedom and liberty. And I still think there's a remnant of all of us here and others that can get that back. But it's going to take a lot more than politics as we kind of keep on dancing around tonight. But, I'll finish with kind of how I started, which is I do believe the other side has convinced themselves of the lie because it makes them more comfortable. It really does. And deep down, if you really nail it, they know it's not true, but they're able to live in their jacuzzi of lies and they don't want to leave.
Nor are we having a conversation about natural immunity. The CDC doesn't even keep records on this. They had to be sued in order to turn over their estimate. And it turns out that they did put out an estimate very quietly. 143 million Americans have natural immunity. That is, they've contracted the coronavirus and they've survived. You add that up to the numbers of people that have had at least one shot, that's almost everybody. And they're not even talking about it. Now, regarding the willingness to believe lies, I have had a very close friend of over 40 years. My brother Kirk and I, my late brother Kirk and I were very close. But this man was the best man at my wedding when I was married years ago briefly. I chose him over my brother. That's how close we were. He's a liberal. He stopped speaking to me after my support of Donald Trump because he claims that Donald Trump mocked a handicapped reporter. My friend has a son with special needs, very sensitive about the topic. And I said, he didn't mock a handicapped reporter. He mocked the reporter's cowardice. Donald Trump, you might recall, shortly after he got elected, said that there were Muslims celebrating the fall of the towers. And when reporters, of course, were looking for a corroboration, because everything Donald Trump said had to be corroborated, they couldn't find it. Donald Trump produced an article written by this reporter who said that he observed people cheering when the walls fell. So they went to the reporter and said, did you say this? And Porter said, well, I wasn't sure there were that many. I wasn't sure that there were a whole bunch of them. I'm not sure. And Donald Trump then mocked him for his retreat. And my friend was convinced he was mocking him because he was handicapped. The reporter, by the way, has an atrophied arm. He doesn't go like this, which is what Donald Trump does. Donald Trump also uses that same gesture to mock himself. He used it to mock an able-bodied general. He uses that expression to mock people. Right. And I sent my friend a very long letter, plus a link called Catholics for, the number four, it's still up, Catholics for Trump, which showed a series of videos where Donald Trump used that gesture to convince my friend that Donald Trump was not mocking a handicapped reporter. It didn't matter. By the way, my friend got a 100% score on his SAT and close to 100% score on his LSAT, and he's a law professor. He's brilliant. It didn't matter. He hated Donald Trump and did not want to unhate him. 83% of Democrats believe Donald Trump is a racist, according to a poll. This is a man who presided over the best economy for blacks, for Asians, for Hispanics in American history. He pardoned Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight champion, who was convicted of violating what's called the Mann Act for taking women across state lines. They happen to be white women. He went to jail for that. Ken Burns, a left-wing documentarian in Sylvester Stallone, went to George W. Bush and Barack Obama to get them to pardon him. They didn't do it. Trump did. Trump put historical funding for black colleges on a 10-year footing. No one had ever done that before. He expanded so-called opportunity zones to generate economic activity in the inner city. He supports school choice, which urban parents want. And he did something to secure the borders. The biggest detriment to unskilled black and brown workers in the inner city are unskilled illegal aliens with whom they have to compete for jobs and who put downward pressure on their wages. Donald Trump did all of this. If Donald Trump is a racist, he needs to go back to racism school.
Right.
But they've convinced themselves that he is a racist, and it doesn't matter. These facts just don't matter. They hate his guts, and they don't want to unhate him.
Did you want to weigh in? Okay, well, that's interesting on that point, because I wanted to get to this, and Charlie was starting it, and I wanted to flesh it out a little bit with both of you when you're talking about hate facts, hating science. Years ago in the 50s, the philosopher Hannah Arendt said, woe be to the society that uses children for political games of adults. And Charlie, you were starting on this, and Larry, I'd love your take on it as well. What is your sense of, Dennis was talking about children, adult children, not speaking to their parents and how they should. What do you say about a society that is torturing the mental and social health of its children right now?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say a lot. I've said that masking children is child abuse. I said it since the very beginning. And it takes everything in me in an airport when I see, you know, kids with masks on not to say something. Now, the airport's different. There's a mandate there. But when it's at a grocery store and I see parents that do that, it's child abuse. People should be penalized for that. You put a mask on a child? You should go to jail for that. And I've said that all along. And by the way, I could tell by the applause, not even everyone here agrees. And that's insane. The kid, if you put a kid in a car, you put them at far greater risk than dying from COVID. And by the way, that's also acting as if the mask is going to do something. So you have like two false premises. You ever put a kid in a swimming pool? Far greater risk of dying in a swimming pool. Swimming pools, and by the way, Arizona has a lot of swimming pools, are killing fields for kids versus COVID. It's like statistically, like not even close. Not to mention cancer, suicide. More kids have died from suicide than from COVID. And this is what's so amazing to me. I got to be careful in this audience saying this. I mean it. What is it with, and I this audience probably feels the same way. When are baby boomers going to stop robbing from the future of their kids and grandkids? When is that going to stop? I say this not as like, I'm sure Larry agrees. Dennis definitely agrees. He writes about it. But it's like, so you're going to forcibly vaccinate a six-year-old and make them wear a mask because you're afraid of getting the virus? Like, really? Like that we, and I just,
it's a society that fears its children. It's Stephen King. It's Children of the Corn. Yeah.
And so
you bet.
But then I get even more repulsed. It's two things. That's one part of it that unfortunately even a lot of Republicans play ball with that, right? And I've seen that just in intimate kind of circles. Then there's another component of which you talk about, though, which is the generous use of children as political right. objects. That's a different side, right? Which is, you know, like the high priestess of the climate change religion, Greta Thunberg, right? Who is, you know, she's basically, you know, nothing more than an end times preacher, right? She's no different than the person you would put on the side of the street. You know, the world is going to end. The world is going to end. That's basically her whole shtick. And of course, it's just a naked and political power grab. And, but there should be a kind of a detente that, like, you know, kids are off limits. You can't use them to try to, you know, pursue political power. Obviously, that's not going to happen anytime soon. But the sad reality is that, we're actually finally getting smart and wise to do this, right? Because the other side's been using kids for gun control debates. Right. They've been using kids for all this. We're like, oh, wait a second. We can use kids in political debates. Let's go take over school boards. We're going to go win the governor's mansion in Virginia, right? It's like, what a concept. Like, we could play that game too. I don't love it. It should be, you know, these issues should be non-political. But your specific question, I have a tendency to answer questions because I'm not a politician, is you ask, what does it say for the political and mental health of the whole? What does it say for the health of a nation? Yeah, we're ailing. We're sick. This never should have happened. The lockdowns are the greatest mistake, I think, done in my lifetime and in modern American history. They had zero epidemiological upside at all whatsoever. The lockdowns were the best living example of what every single person saw that's happened in the last 30 years, which is this. We're going to borrow some things we don't have to make ourselves feel good. The national debt's now $28 trillion. We don't talk about that anymore. Do you notice how we never talk about the national debt? We used to talk about it all the time. Yep. The lockdowns were just the national debt in a different way. We're going to shut down kids because we want to live. It's the same thing. It's intergenerational theft. And what really upsets me is that if you're a baby boomer in this audience, you were raised by a greatest generation and did the opposite. The greatest generation sacrificed for the baby boomers. I'm not saying baby boomers didn't sacrifice. I'm not saying you didn't work hard and all that. But I want you to think very deeply about what I just said, which is when you were 6, 7, or 8, did you have an upbringing where you had to be masked and watching a laptop all day long? You realize it's the most miserable, suicidal, drug addicted, alcohol addicted generation in American history. You know that 78% of Generation Z say they feel depressed at least a majority of the days of a week. 78%. There's a reason for that. It was designed. And there's some truth to that. That's right. It was designed from the top down. So there's a lot to think about there.
Yeah, no, the numbers just came in. If there is a teenager who is admitted to the hospital over the last year and a half, it is more likely they are there, statistically more likely they are there. Yeah, that's exactly right, for a mental health or psychotic break due to COVID mitigation rather than from COVID. That's an astounding thing.
Well, that's right. California locked down its state in a more severe way than did anybody else. And domestic violence went up. Suicides went up.
Right.
Opioid addiction went up.
Right. Things we had a great handle on 2 years ago.
Right. Right?
Things that were not a problem.
We assume child abuse went up. And the reason I say we assume is because the number one reporter of child abuse are the schools.
Right.
And since kids were not in school, we really have no idea. But regarding psychological assaults and abuse, can you think of anything more corrosive than critical race theory? Pushing the idea that America is systemically racist, telling white kids that they are oppressors, telling black kids that they're victims. Racism has never been a less significant factor in American life than today. When Barack Obama got elected, he got elected with a greater percentage of the white vote than Mitt Romney did 4 years earlier. By the way, when Donald Trump got elected, he got elected with a smaller percentage of the white vote than Mitt Romney did 4 years earlier. There was an article, an interview that Martin Luther King did in 1966, British television. And he said, I've been shocked at the racial progress over the last 2 years since the Civil Rights Act of 64 has been passed. Given the progress, he said, in race relations in America, we could have a president in about 40 years' time, or maybe even less. About right on cue, Barack Obama was elected 2008. King didn't say in 40 years' time we'll have CEOs of Fortune 500 companies who are black, which we had. He didn't say we're going to have a black president of an Ivy League university, which has happened. He didn't say that Congress will be 10% black, which has happened. He didn't say there'll be a black football coach of Notre Dame, which has happened. He didn't say there'll be a black head of the American Medical Association, which has happened. He didn't say there'll be a black person who's the head of the American Bar Association, which has happened. He said president, meaning once it happens, it's done. It's over. You can walk into a voting booth or fill out your ballot in the privacy of your own home or in the ballot and vote whoever you want. And once that happens, it's done. Everything else after that should be anticlimactic, but it isn't. And that's because 4, 6, 8, 12. 4% is the percentage of the black vote Republicans got in 2008 when Obama first ran. 6% is what they got when he ran for re-election after he presided over the worst economic recovery since 1949. By the way, black poverty went up from the time he came into office to the time he left. 8% is what Donald Trump got when he said, "What do you have to lose?" 12% is what he got the last time when he presided over, as I said, the best economy for blacks in history. That's a 50% increase from 2016 to 2020. And they are scared to death. God forbid blacks, Hispanics begin thinking about things like everybody else, crime, schools, whether or not I have a job. The more that happens, the scarier they get. That's why they've doubled down on this crap called critical race theory and reparations.
My own sense is that this is going to be the next issue dominating for the next couple of years, critical race theory, reparations, the racist charge against us. And I guess I'll ask you the closing question on this, and feel free to integrate whatever thoughts you want to. Charlie, as you said, we answer questions, but we answer them the way we want. But we also understand commercial breaks, right? It's this. We convinced ourselves, most of us, that what our children were learning in college didn't matter much. That they might come home over winter break and quote some French philosopher we never heard of, justifying some violent action in a country in Africa we never heard of in the name of Marxism. And we said it'll be fine. They'll graduate, they'll get into the real world, they'll start making money, and they'll moderate. That stuff just stays in colleges. Well, it's my thesis that there was a lab leak from the ivory towers, which is far more toxic than anything that came out of Wuhan, because it is affecting our brains and not our lungs. Would you just say something about that? You both toil in these areas as we close, and how we think about that.
Yes, and before I forget, I just want to thank this amazing station and thank all of you that listen to us every single day. It really does mean a lot, truly. And I'm going to do what Dennis does at every event, which is support our sponsors. So when you guys hear the advertising breaks and you support the sponsors, it's a big deal. And people, it's so funny. It's so obvious, but it needs to be said. People say, "Charlie, what are the good companies to support?" I don't know. Turn on AM960 and listen to the commercials for a little bit. And then go buy. If they have the courage to run ads on AM960, it's a good place to start, right?
Right.
It's pretty obvious. So that's like the opposite of cancel culture. It's number one. Number two, we have our big event at Turning Point USA coming up here at the Phoenix Convention Center, December 18, 19, 2021. We have Tucker coming, Candace coming, Jesse Waters, Greg Gutfeld, Donald Trump Jr. It's incredible. It's called America Fest. We're going to have AM960 there. You guys can get your tickets. They're running out. We're going to have thousands and thousands of people there. TPUSA.com is the place to go. You guys probably follow us and you guys know it, but just want to make sure I'm flagging it for you guys. It's going to be local. It's going to be epic. It's going to be big. And we'd love to have you there. It's going to be the most star-studded lineup in the history of Arizona entertainment for conservatives. And we have some big speakers yet to be announced. So just want to make sure I mention that. What was the question? I'm kidding. So, I remember. I'm being facetious. Okay, so now let's get down to, I'm gonna get down to the close for what this is talking about. Okay, I deal on college campuses. I visit college campuses, so you don't have to. I'm the only conservative to speak at UC Berkeley, UCLA, and Stanford in one semester and live to tell about it. Right. So, I can. I can go on the subject for quite some time. So I'll be as blunt as possible because I know all of you want it that way and you guys have places to be. College is largely a scam. And it's largely a scam that is being forced by upper middle class parents and grandparents that don't want their kids to become plumbers. No, you're right. Hold on. He said, what's wrong with a plumber? You're right. But right now, if you live in Scottsdale or Paradise Valley, if you tell your friends and the fellow moms and fellow dads that your kid is becoming a plumber or working construction, they'll look at you funny. That you don't get much social currency to tell your friends that your son's becoming an electrician. You do if you say that, you know, little Johnny's going to Stanford. You get treated like a successful parent. We have destroyed a generation off the egos of a, we have destroyed a generation off the egos of an upper middle class generation that lives vicariously through their children. No one in this room can say the numbers don't show it, the statistics don't show it, that college has made us a better country. 41% of kids that go to college drop out. 41%. Where did AOC come from? Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar was rescued from a Kenyan refugee camp and she learned to hate America because we sent her to our schools. You want to know where cancel culture came from? College campuses. You want to know where men can become pregnant from? College campuses. The whole country's a college campus now. And yet it's amazing. We keep sending our kids there. Our most prized possession. Why? I never get a good answer. This is my next book. And I think I know the reason. The reason is because we've been programmed to believe that they're actually benefiting our kids. I didn't go to college. I do nothing but hire kids. We hire 195 people that work for us at Turning Point USA. I could tell you, college means nothing. Nothing. Maybe if you want to be an engineer, maybe if you want to be a doctor, maybe if you want to be a lawyer. Guess what? That's 7% of all college kids. 7%. Most go to go study North African lesbian poetry or whatever. To go borrow money they don't have, to study things that don't matter, to find jobs that don't exist. You guys live in Scott. I had a plumber that I hired recently, otherwise known as an extortionist. I asked the plumber how much you're making. He said, I made $325,000 so far this year. As a plumber, muscular class, working with his hands. We're telling our kids to go study things that don't matter. 1619 Project, Robin DiAngelo, all this nonsense. But yeah, whatever it takes, don't become one of them. We got a serious crisis. You want to know why the country's in a mess? It's because we have a generation that bought into the true big lie that college is some sort of gateway to a better life. The opposite is true. These places are cesspools. They are godless institutions. They will destroy your kids' values. I'll use another Dennis Prager line. You'll play Russian roulette with your kids' values when you send them to college. So for grandparents and parents, I implore you, please reconsider sending your kids to these places. You may never see them again.
Ooh. Thank you, Charlie.
Larry, you didn't study lesbian poetry, did you?
What's wrong with North African lesbian poetry?
Yeah.
That was my minor.
Yeah, that's our college. Next event. North African lesbian poetry, for which it stands. We'll be doing it in about 2 months.
Now, I too want to thank the station for putting on this event. It's been amazing. And I also want to thank the men and women who are or who have served in our military who are here. My father was a Marine, and I asked my dad why he joined the Marine after Pearl Harbor, and he said two reasons. If there are any Marines here, you know what I'm going to say. Number one, I heard that. Number one, they go where the action is. Number two, I love the uniforms. You know, Seth, frequently when I speak, and I speak a lot, the audience is predominantly white, as is this one. And usually maybe one or two blacks are there. Sir, I feel your pain. I was giving a speech. Right. Yes. Two black faces of white supremacy. At least I got some company. You, sir, are not alone. So I'm giving a talk, and there's a black man standing in back. And I make a point, and he goes like this. I make another point, he goes like this. Arms folded, he's going like this. Obviously, he's not smelling what I'm cooking. Speech is over, And the gentleman, big guy, comes toward me. I had security. And he said, I am angry. Not at you. I'm angry at myself. Before tonight, I did not know that only a handful of Republicans owned slaves. Almost every slave owner was a Democrat. Before tonight, I did not know that as a percentage of the party, more Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Act of 64 than did Democrats. Before tonight, I did not know that Democrats founded the KKK. Before tonight, I did not know that the percentage of black kids entering the world went from 25% in 1965 to 70% now. I did not know that the government was incentivizing women to marry the government and incentivizing men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. I had no idea these things were going on. I'm angry at myself for reading stuff that has indoctrinated me and for not knowing the truth. Thank you so much for opening my eyes, he said, and walked away. Hallelujah. The truth will set all of us free if only we're courageous enough to stand up and deliver it. God bless you all. God bless you all.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, you could do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.